This is the Broski and Moussan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
I've been watching the fallout over this Johnson & Johnson vaccine announcement yesterday, Christina. A lot has happened in the last 24 hours since this announcement because there's just a lot of reaction from a lot of people. You know, the Biden administration is worried about what they call vaccine hesitancy. You ever heard that phrase before?
Yes.
Yeah. People who don't want to take it, basically, and there's millions of people that don't want to take it. Minority communities in polls show big numbers of Republicans. And so when you have something like this, it doesn't exactly give... Matter of fact, I would ask the question, if you are hesitant to take the vaccine, what does this do when you hear things like this Johnson & Johnson announcement?
Right? That's exactly what I asked on social media this morning was, is that, you know, the government says... This should instill confidence in you because we're putting your safety first and we're being overly cautious here. And therefore, you should have all the confidence in the world of knowing that these vaccines are completely safe. And I, you know, I asked the question, do you see this? Do you see it the same way as the government? Because if you were hesitant in the first place, does this just make you want to run out there and get vaccinated? I mean, I'm a huge proponent of these vaccines. But I have to say that if I was on the fence, I would have some concerns here.
Yeah, but it's like they say, you know, there's when you look at these drug advertisements on TV and they list all of the side effects. I mean, everything has some amount of side effects. They've delivered more than 6 million of these vaccines. Is that right?
Yes.
And they've had six problems that we know of. I guess they're pausing just to make sure there aren't more. But right now we've got six. One of those, I think, was a death. And another critical condition. And so that's like one in a million and less than one in a million for death at this point. Donald Trump weighed in and said, you know, this is a perfectly fine vaccine. You're destroying their reputation. And I wonder about that. You know, how does this affect the vaccine's reputation? They're not saying it's no good. They're trying to be very careful about what they say here, is that we're pausing to just check it out. This is all about safety. And as you said, Christina, the way they're spinning this is this should make everybody feel better. We're totally transparent. If we see any possibility of anything, we're going to pause and take a look and then hopefully get rolling again. But my question is for people who are already, you know, not interested in taking it, on the fence, if you want to put it that way, you know, to me, this isn't something that inspires confidence. Okay, well, they're being totally transparent. Now I want it. Is that a natural reaction?
Yeah, no.
No, I don't think it is either. It's so if you're what they call, if you're vaccine hesitancy, you probably still are. By the way, they're going to have a big special come Sunday on NBC.
Oh, good.
It's going to make everybody feel better.
Yeah.
It's going to be a nice, happy
I think Morgan Freeman's a part of that one.
Yeah. Yeah, they got a lot of people. Michelle Obama, Anthony Fauci.
Because everybody wants to hear from all of these people. We want Morgan Freeman, Michelle Obama, Dr. Fauci telling us why we should get that. Those are the people that really should be the spokesperson for the vaccine hesitant.
This is what they don't get. You know, this is NBC. It's going to be on NBC.
Uh-huh.
And they think if they get like celebrities and Dr. Fauci and people like Michelle Obama to tell people that everything's okay, that this will work. But it's, you know, we've talked about this before. These are not the people, I think, all of these people are polarized, you know, based on their political beliefs. Dr. Fauci, to me, has ceased to be an effective spokesperson for this. He probably is a good spokesperson for the left and people who want to take the vaccine. But he's not a good spokesperson for the people who don't want to take it.
Correct.
And I don't think Michelle Obama is either. Nor are a bunch of celebrities.
Correct.
Right? So they just don't get that. You know, if you want to convince people to take it, you've got to think of something else. And I know the natural thing to think of is celebrity endorsements, right? Let's get a bunch of celebrities. Mm-hmm. Let's get Michelle. Everybody loves Michelle. Dr. Fauci. This is not going to convince anybody who doesn't want the vaccine to take the vaccine, I don't think. Do you? It's a one-hour special, Sunday sometime. I don't even know if people will watch it.
No, I agree. You know, it always baffles me when people that are in charge of programming put programming together that you know that like 60% of people could care less about. And the 40% that do probably were on board from the beginning. To me, like I'm thinking about this, right? What do people love to watch? This is on Saturday?
Sunday, I think, yeah.
Sunday. Do you know what the highest rated TV show is on Sundays?
Would it be 60 Minutes?
Correct.
Okay.
60 Minutes is the highest rated TV show on Sundays, and it's CBS. Why do you think 60 Minutes is the highest rated TV show on Sundays? Because it's investigative. People love, you know, interesting, salacious, delved into CSI. I mean, why do you think CSI does so well? Why do you think Law and Order does? John's watched all 24 million seasons of Law and Order. Why does Law and Order do so well? People love delving into the crux of things, and they want to hear from experts. No, I'm sorry. No disrespect to Michelle Obama. They don't want to hear from a former first lady who's not a doctor. And they don't. Dr. Jill Biden isn't included in that because she's not the medical doctor that I'm speaking of. She's not a medical doctor. She's no expert. She's not a scientist. She didn't come up with the vaccine. She can't speak to the apprehensions that people might have. So instead, they're going to talk about your patriotic duty. I think that continuing to tell people that are vaccine hesitant that it's their patriotic duty and that's the only thing that you're telling them and not addressing other concerns. Like somebody asked me last night, they said, well, you know, I'm kind of on the fence about it because, you know, I'm young. I'm in good health. The likelihood that I would die from this or end up in the hospital is minimal. And my spouse is not going to get this vaccine. So what good does it do me living in a home with someone else that is unvaccinated? And I can't answer that question because I'm not a doctor. I'm not a health expert. I'm not, you know, I can't speak to that. I don't know what to tell you. That's, people have these kinds of questions. You know, this seems like it went really fast. You say you've been saying this for years. Tell me what you knew beforehand. Tell me what you knew at the beginning of all of this. You want to do a special on it? Give me a special on the history of COVID. Give me a special on how you came up with this vaccine. Give me a special on why I should get the vaccine, but my spouse who lives in the house with me doesn't, and why that's a benefit to me and to them. Give me all of this information instead of great voiceover work by Morgan Freeman, don't get me wrong, and Michelle Obama and whatever other celebrities you can tell me, you know, throw in there to tell me that it's my patriotic duty. That's just, nobody wants to watch that. And yet people that come up with programming come up with this junk, John.
Well, it seems like when it comes to this vaccine, the approach from the very beginning is for politicians to be the ones touting it. And, you know, they have the lowest approval rating of anybody on the planet, maybe other than reporters. So I think, you know, if you want to convince people to take it, I don't really know how to convince people to take it. I think we all have a lot of
information. You have to give them the information.
Yeah.
And let them make a choice.
The people who don't want to take it aren't going to take it because some celebrity says to take it, right? That's not going to work.
At least I hope not.
Yeah.
I really hope not.
Yeah. You know, celebrities have some credibility when it comes to a lot of products. You know, I mean, if
how shallow do they think we are? I mean, like, really, that's very shallow.
Well, the whole
I'm gonna
thing
go
about,
get it because Kim Kardashian tells me to, you know, or whoever.
Well, I would
Morgan
listen
Freeman.
To Kim Kardashian probably before I'd listen to Joe Biden, right? I mean, because I think she has a lot more product knowledge than he does. But I think it's the whole idea of these mandated shutdowns. It's the same attitude, is we need to tell you what to do. Just do what we say. Don't ask questions. And when you have questions because of things like this, which everybody does, they kind of just tell you to shut up and listen. You know, just go take the vaccine and we'll get all these celebrities to tell you it's okay instead of answering your questions. You know, and if you ask a question, it's almost like you're some kind of conspiracy theorist. You just have questions, you know. I think that people who don't want them, you just haven't convinced them, and by putting up a line of celebrities, is not going to convince them. That's not what's going to happen here. And then, you know, then Trump weighs in, you know, and he's basically defending the vaccine because he says that, you know, Pfizer could have announced before the election, according to Trump. He says they waited till after the election to announce their vaccine because they didn't want to help him win, which probably would have given him the win if that would have been announced a couple of weeks early. He probably would have won.
Right.
Right. But they waited till after the election. Now, they say they waited because that's when it all came together. Trump says it's obvious they waited till after the election. So he says Joe Biden's administration is trying to ruin the reputation of this J&J vaccine because Biden owes Pfizer for the election win. I mean, you know, he's defending the vaccine. He says, look, it's one in a million. Every drug has one in a million something.
Yes.
Okay, so you've destroyed this vaccine's reputation for nothing. And, you know, you kind of look at this and you kind of go, well, you know, is one in a million? Do we expect better than one in a million in terms of negative effects? Do we expect better than that?
I would like to be able to say, John, that they put it on pause because they're going to look into it's, we know that it's women between the ages of 18 and 49. It could be hormonal. It could be birth control. It could be a number of things. And I would like to be able to say that they're going to spend the time, they're going to study that, come up with an answer, and then say, you know, you might want to consider that if you have these underlying health risks that you don't want to get this vaccine, you want to go get a different vaccine. I'd like to be able to say that, except for the fact that when Europe paused AstraZeneca and 20 countries stopped giving out AstraZeneca's vaccine and they looked into blood clots, they still today aren't really able to tell you what was causing these blood clots, whether it was the vaccine or some or underlying conditions or something else. So they just say, if you think you're prone to blood clots, maybe you shouldn't get this vaccine and leave it at that. So and by the way, if you want to talk about confidence, Europe already had vaccine hesitancy to begin with. It is 11% lower now since AstraZeneca's vaccine pause.
What do you mean? You mean there's fewer people?
11% fewer people now want to get the vaccine in Europe.
So they have more hesitancy.
After they paused AstraZeneca.
They have more hesitancy.
More hesitancy because of the pause there. Yeah. They didn't see confidence in that.
Yeah, well, if people are as shallow as they think they are, that all I have to do is trot Michelle Obama out there for you to take it, and then you'll take it, then they're not going to want this vaccine because they're, you know, the news is bad and it's like, I already didn't want to take it. Now you've taken this off the market. I can't even get it. I don't think that makes people want to have it. You know, their spin is we're being honest. We're being transparent. You should have more confidence now because we took it off the market. So therefore it'll be safe. Everything out there is safe. And this will be safe if we reintroduce it. But if people are as shallow as they think they are, they just heard the bad news and they're gone already. And I'm waiting for your explanation. And as they say, if you're explaining, you're losing, right? 490-5858. My question for you is if you have vaccine hesitancy, as they call it, sounds like a disease, where are you now?
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
All right, as we talk about this pause of the J&J shot, and looking out there for those of you that have vaccine hesitancy and asking, do you agree with the U.S. government when they say, no, pausing the shot should instill confidence in you that things are safe because we are taking extra precautions to make sure that it is safe? 490-5858, Dean, what do you think? You're on KMJ.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
You know, I haven't gotten the vaccine and I'm waiting. Anybody that was in the military kind of knows what it's like to be a guinea pig for probably a lot of things. I mean, I have no idea what type of vaccines they gave me. And some of the things were just that they explained to us was a little bit outlandish. But you know what? I just don't think the vaccine has been vetted enough. And I think that they're really pushing hard on this sell. So with them pausing Johnson & Johnson, it really hasn't changed my opinion. I'm still going to wait. As long as I can, I do believe that at some point they're going to force us into getting the vaccine. And when that time comes, then I'll reevaluate, you know, my point of view on it. But you know, another point that I wanted to make you know, with the questions concerning this vaccine, you know, we see, I won't necessarily say celebrities, but let's talk about, you know, your politicians, your president, your vice president and everything that, you know, go make it a media spectacle when they're getting the vaccine. How do we know that they're actually getting the vaccine? How do we know that they're not actually waiting themselves to find out, you know, what the long-term effects may be with everyone else?
Yeah.
We don't.
I don't know for sure. But
we
let me
don't.
You know, you mentioned being in the military, and I just remember seeing a story. It's like 40% of Marines don't want the vaccine. Now, you mentioned the military, Dean. What is it about that? I mean, you said you felt like you were a guinea pig. You think there's something about being in the military that doesn't, you don't want these things?
You know, it's really in hindsight, actually, you know, when you're 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, you do what you're told. That's why the military wants everyone young. But I'm a Desert Storm vet. And I remember on the way to it was actually Desert Shield. It was before Desert Storm started. They actually gave us a vaccination that was supposed to help counteract sarin gas. We didn't question it, but in hindsight, I'm thinking, you know, at 50 years old now, I'm looking back on it and going, really?
Yeah.
Is there such a thing?
That's why they want 18-year-olds in the military.
Right.
Because you don't think about these things until you're 40.
That stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Dean. Yeah.
All right, thanks, Dean.
Do you remember that story, Christina? 40% of Marines don't want this vaccine.
Right. No, we've heard Dean's comments from other listeners that were in the military as well.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, I was a guinea pig. That I think that was the last term that somebody used, was guinea pig long enough. I'm not going to do it again. That's not been my life experience, right? So I'm willing to be the guinea pig this time around, but I would understand why someone might not want to be.
Well, the thing is, you know what he also said? He said, I just thought I'd wait and see what happened, right?
Yes.
So just put yourself in that mindset. Okay, I'm waiting to see what happened. Now something happened, okay? We also saw AstraZeneca in Europe. That happened.
Uh-huh.
So these are not the kind of things that happen that they're hoping for. If you're hesitant, right? You're hoping that nothing will happen, right?
Well,
and at some point after nothing happens, you'll say, okay, this looks pretty safe. I think I'll get it. But if things keep happening like this, these are not good things that make me want to get it if I'm hesitant to begin with.
Well, okay, but here's the other aspect to that. And that is as somebody that has received a shot, the likelihood, knock on wood, of this happening is 1 in a million. Now, if I'm going to tell my husband, and I know he's listening, if I'm the 1 in a million, go buy a lotto ticket because it was unlucky for me. But I mean, that's quite the odds.
No, it is.
So, you know,
I'm not
concerned.
I know, but you are not the hesitant person. You know, and that's my point. Put your head in the hesitant person's place. Now, why are they hesitant? Everybody I've talked to who is hesitant says, I'm just waiting to see what happens.
I want
to
wait and see.
Okay, now I'm seeing stuff that's happening. The stuff that's happening isn't eliminating my hesitancy. It's not the kind of stuff I was hoping to see happen, which I thought would all be good.
Right, but I'm just saying, for them, think of all, we went through the list before. The side effects of ibuprofen, the side effects of amoxicillin, the side effects of penicillin, right? You can go through all of the side effects of any drug and look at them, and they're all kind of scary. And so this could end up being a side effect for some people. And unfortunately, we're learning it because you're vaccinating 7 million people all at the same time with one drug around the country.
I get it. But the other drugs you take have been out there longer for the most part and have gone through longer tests and not this quickie thing.
Correct.
Which is the other problem.
But people still reacted to them. Just remember, real life people still reacted to those drugs.
I gotcha.
They're not made up.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
We're talking about vaccine hesitancy, and the White House is concerned that this Johnson & Johnson pause is going to have an impact on hesitancy. So they are trying to get the message out, Christina, that this should actually reassure everybody because they're being totally transparent and safe, and safety is their number one concern. So you should feel good. Are you feeling good?
490-5858. Todd, you're on KMJ.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. You know, we're throwing numbers around about the percentages and everything, and what are the percentages of a healthy person, no underlying conditions, who contracts COVID, of dying or going to the hospital?
Very low.
Very low.
Very low. So why does that person need to take a vaccine? The person that's got diabetes, overweight, I understand that part. But why are you forcing that healthy person? Because I've been around no less than 50 people that have gotten COVID. Most of them didn't even know they were sick.
No, so I know. We know that happened to a lot of people.
Yeah. So if we're protecting people, why do I want to take it? And it is an experimental phase. We don't know long term. I have a 17-year-old kid. They're going to probably force him to take it. How do we know 5 years from now or 10 years from now he wants to have kids and he can't have kids? We don't know that. So it's... This is why people are hesitant. This was rushed through. Did we need it? Obviously we did. But I think the people that we need to be protecting are the vulnerable, and those are the ones that are going to have to take the shot because they're the ones that are going to go to the hospital or pass away. So having healthy people or doing vaccination cards so you can travel. I have to travel over to Europe a couple times. I'm probably going to have to carry a card with me and get vaccinated against my will. But I, you know, you're really left with no choice.
Well, that's the thing. You know, what's going to happen in terms of what are you going to need a card to do? Okay,
mm-hmm. Right.
Like these vaccination passports, they're kind of not talking about that so much anymore. But there still could be places that you're going to need it, like on an airplane or a cruise ship, or going to Europe or some other country, and maybe even some businesses. Concerts or football games, you know, that might be up to the schools, you know, a college football game. So you need a card to come to the game. Could happen, I guess. Wouldn't be government mandate.
So, no, absolutely. And this is unprecedented times. I mean, we all have to admit this. That everything that we have done to this point by shutting countries down, by shutting our country down, by now requiring us to have vaccinations, the whole bit, it is unprecedented. None of us have been in this, have seen this time in our country. And it's scary for a lot of people to sit there and go, oh, sure, just shoot this vaccine in my arm, you know, that you discovered a year ago. And, hey, we're all good with that. I can see, I'm not an anti-vaxxer by any means, but it doesn't make sense to me if healthy people are at low risk with COVID that they have to take a vaccination.
But, Todd.
That to me is ridiculous.
But, Todd, Michelle Obama is going to tell you on Sunday that it's your patriotic duty. Doesn't that help?
Yeah.
that doesn't make you feel better?
I've never looked at Michelle Obama of really actually liking this country anyway. So patriotic duty doesn't resonate with me from her.
Okay. But,
anyhow,
you know, Todd brings up points here, John, that I think a lot of people share those same concerns that he has. And that is what the government needs to address here. You know, is this a vaccine that came very quickly, or is this a vaccine that you've been working on for years? And tell us about what you have been working on for years, how this came about, where it started. Give people a history lesson in all of this. Make them want to sit down and see. People are interested in this. I really do think so. People are very interested in this type of stuff. Give them the information and then let them do with that what they want. Someone like Todd still may not feel better about it, but somebody else might.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that the knee-jerk reaction with something like this is to go to the typical standby solution. You know, politicians, and even Dr. Fauci at this point has kind of worn out his welcome to a lot of people.
Yes.
I don't think he's a great guy to have on this program either.
No, I don't think so either.
490-5858, Marilyn, you're on KMJ.
Good morning.
Morning.
I was in the military and took the anthrax shot. Now, all of us going over the sandbox had to have the anthrax. So in my building of about 150 troops, three of us, after taking the vaccine, came down with multiple sclerosis. So I am the government. Trust me. No, I'm not going to take this vaccine. unless they knock me out and force me.
I'm trying to remember the anthrax vaccine. Was that something that was developed quickly?
Yeah, I really don't know. When you're in the military, you just roll up your sleeve.
Yeah, I know. They just say, yes, sir, right?
Yeah. And I think his name was Deem, who was also in the military. We're a great test tube.
So do you think there's something about the military that makes them hesitant to get these vaccines? I know in your case, it makes a lot of sense, but I mean, do you think that's kind of typical?
I think at least 50%, yes.
Yeah.
Because, in today's world, how many people serve in the military? A very low percentage, probably about as many people really have a reaction to the COVID.
Yeah. Marilyn, are you doing okay?
I am. Thank you, Jesus. I am. I'm on a medication from Pfizer that has been very, very good for me for the last 15 years.
How are you with this vaccine?
With the
COVID
the
vaccine.
MS vaccine?
COVID.
Oh, no, no.
No way.
No. No way. No way. Nope. Maybe in 4 or 5 years when I see the long-term effects. But I had the COVID. I'm 67 years old. I had the COVID, and I had about 4 days of fever and a little diarrhea, and that was all.
Okay. Maybe you're good to go then, right? Got the antibodies.
I'm willing to place my trust in a higher power. So,
good place to be. I like the trust there. That's good.
Well, and it's funny that she brought that up. And thanks, Marilyn, for calling. I was thinking about this last night when we were looking at Michigan and Texas, right? Michigan, you have someone like Michael Moore calling on Michigan's governor just to completely shut down the state, which is seeing a surge in cases. And then you look at Texas and you look at how Texas handled things. And while they've opened back up, and, everybody was the doom that was to come, right? Their cases are going down. And Dr. Fauci is totally perplexed by this. And I have to wonder, then what's wrong with me when I look at it and I say, well, obviously to me, Texas has reached herd immunity. I don't know what's so confusing about that. They handled things very differently than just shutting down. They've reached herd immunity and they're probably pretty good to go at this point. But, at the end of the day, when you look at this, Texas versus California, California versus Florida, and we're all kind of end up about the same no matter how we handled it. It's just in the time frame of which it was. So we kick the can down the road and extend out our surge, whereas Texas and Florida get their surges earlier. At the end of the day, I think that what this says to me is like, I have no control over this. As much as you try to control the situation, it's kind of out of our hands and it's up to a higher power.
Yeah.
Remember
last week, we had the Madera County Director of Public Health on? And I asked her this question. I said, what do you make of California versus Florida?
Right.
I mean, how do you figure this out as a health expert? Like we shut down here and they pretty much didn't and we're at the same place. And she said she didn't really have an answer to that question. And then I said, well, is it good that the United States handled it the way they did? So every state did their own solution. We can go back and look and reexamine this at some point in time and say what worked, what didn't work. And she thought that was good, right? That was. But a lot of people, blame Trump for not having a national plan. Now, if we'd had a national plan that everybody did the same thing, we would have no idea what worked and didn't work. We'd only have one plan.
True.
And yet there's a lot of Democrats that, blame Trump and basically kicked him out of office because he didn't have a national plan. And we wouldn't even know if we'd have had Biden's national plan, there wouldn't be Texas and Florida. We wouldn't even have those examples.
Sure.
Now, here you are in Michigan. Here's another thing.
Okay.
CDC director is recommending shutdown. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, some Republicans in Michigan are going, we want to be more like Texas. So if we have a surge, let's not shut down. Surge us some vaccines. Let's vaccinate everybody. And she says, no, that won't work. Now, Maybe there's good reason for that, Christina, but does that help get the message across that you need to take your vaccine?
That's not the right answer. I mean, when you're talking about vaccine hesitancy and you say, I can't send you vaccines because it won't work, that sentence should never come out of your mouth, ever. You know, probably what she should have said was, you need 5 to 6 weeks of calm and lull to get the vaccines in people's arms to start working in. You know, whether you go with Pfizer or Moderna, Pfizer, you're looking at 5 weeks total. Moderna, you're looking at 6 weeks total time before you are fully vaccinated, quote unquote, right? And so you need that 5 to 6 weeks. You don't want to give a vaccine during a surge because I think it defeats the purpose. So you want to give the vaccine during a lull so that you don't have people after their first shot getting COVID and then kind of negating things. But what you don't want to say is it won't work. Those three words should never leave your mouth.
Yeah. But this, again, you know, it's mixed messages, right?
Right. Because vaccine if you have hesitancy, you're looking at those three words going, well, then what's the point? And then you now are left in a position of having to explain yourself.
Yeah. You should be CDC director.
And that is not a position that you should ever be in a situation like this. So you need to think that through better.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You know, in Michigan, they're going, we're having a surge. We're trying to get vaccines. We can't get enough vaccines. Like everybody says, right? We want more vaccines. We have more people who want vaccines. We can't get them the vaccines. You want everybody vaccinated. So in Michigan, they're going, we have a surge. Give us vaccines. No, that won't work. Well, you just told us we needed to take the vaccines. We want more vaccines.
Exactly.
No, that won't work. Well, then what the hell is the point here?
This is the Broski and Moussan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
As we talk about vaccine hesitancy, let's head back to the phones at 490-5858. Brenda, you're on KMJ.
Yeah, good morning, Christine. My main concern and the main reason I'm not taking the vaccine is because I've seen a video from a nurse and heard other stories, of course, that they used aborted babies to develop this vaccine. And I don't want to have to explain to my creator why a baby was sacrificed so that I could not get ill or live another day.
It's stem cell therapy. The Johnson & Johnson shot was used with stem cells. I don't know that it necessarily comes from aborted babies, but I know that it comes from embryos.
They said it was from aborted fetuses. The nurse that was helped develop it, she actually said it was from aborted fetuses.
Okay. So stem cells. And I know the Catholic Church has, you know, asked their congregations to inspect and see. It is only with the Johnson & Johnson shot. The Moderna and Pfizer shots do not use stem cell therapy for any of their stuff. So if that is the only reason, you might look into the other two.
Well, I didn't take a regular flu shot to start with because I didn't see the necessity of it. So I don't see why I would want to take this flu shot. So
it's not all about that. Because you can get a shot that doesn't have your ethical problem. You just don't want a shot.
Well, and I don't want a shot, but this one makes it even worse.
Well, I know, but I mean, but you're kind of like looking for a reason and you found one, right? But gave you a reason you can take the other shots without that problem, but you still don't want to, you just don't want the shot.
Well, I don't want the shot, but I didn't know that the other ones weren't developed that way. Yeah. I thought they all were.
I know, but that doesn't change your mind.
No, it doesn't change my mind.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me ask you, how does this J&J thing make you feel other than your problem? Just the fact that there is a problem,
I think that I know they developed them a lot faster than they normally do on their other vaccines, and maybe they just didn't wait long enough for the problems to come up. Maybe they didn't have enough time to develop it, and they rushed into it.
Yeah, I think that's the other side of doing this fast, isn't it? It's like we wanted it fast, we needed it fast, it had to happen fast, or it wasn't going to do us any good. But the other side of doing it fast is that.
Mm-hmm.
Is it too fast? Charles, you're on KMJ.
Hello?
Hello, Charles. You're on. Go ahead.
Yes. I'm 74 years old, and I remember back when I was a young kid, they made everybody take, I think it was a smallpox shot or one of those like that, because of the smallpox and stuff, and it was years ago. Now, my mother and father, and I have had them now, shingles. I had them so bad that I'm in pain every day for the rest of my life because the government told all of us that we needed that shot to live and to survive. And I wonder if anybody ever looked into that shot and seen all the people that have shingles now because of what the government has told us that we had to take them and it would help us. But when you get in your 40s and 50s and stuff like that, a lot of people get shingles now.
Well, I tell you, the other side of that is, you know, smallpox was pretty bad, right?
Right.
And we needed to fix that. Now, if there were some side effects. Now, the other thing is, I'm not sure it's a smallpox shot that gives people shingles.
No, I've always been told that it was having, like, for my generation, chickenpox.
Yes, you got the
makes
chickenpox.
Makes you more susceptible to getting shingles.
Not smallpox, chickenpox. But not getting a shot, getting the actual disease.
Correct.
You got chickenpox, now you're susceptible to shingles.
Now it's in your system.
Right.
It's in your system, and it can flare back up in your 50s.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I don't think
or
it had anything to do
with
this. I'm not a doctor, but I'm not aware that it had anything to do with smallpox vaccine.
When I asked my doctor about it, that was the answer I was given.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you know, the smallpox was terrible, you know, and we had to vaccinate people because that would have been a lot worse than getting shingles later, right? And now we have ways to avoid getting shingles. There's a shingle shot.
Right. Yes. You know? Try and say that five times fast.
But I mean, so you had the thing is, the longer you live, the more solutions they have. So you got to take care of smallpox when you're little, okay? Now, by the time we find out what problem that creates, we'll be able to solve that too. By the time you get there, we'll have that solution.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
We had a terrible double homicide in town a few days ago, and this thing's a little hard to figure out because a number of laws have been violated here.
Yes.
And we're trying to figure out exactly who's who here, what happened, how the guy that committed these murders was able to do so.
Right.
And we got a little help on this.
Right. So we've got Paul Spreitz on the phone with us this morning. He's the brother-in-law of one of the victims, Michelle Johnson. And Paul, I'm kind of hoping that you can kind of lay the groundwork for us on this story of who is Michelle Johnson and who is Charlotte Etheridge, the two victims in this story, and also who is the suspect in this case, this DeAndre Foster, and his relationship to your sister-in-law and this other woman?
Hi, guys. Thanks for giving me some time on the air today. So the story kind of goes that Charlotte, who's was 21 years old, actually was a foster daughter to Michelle. And Michelle took her in about 5 years ago from foster and also the streets. She was in a tough position. My sister-in-law took her in and literally tried everything she could to raise her up. With that, she matured pretty darn well. She actually was working, I believe, at Valley Children's Hospital here recently and becoming a more valuable part of our community as a whole, as a person, in terms of her commitment. She, my sister-in-law helped her get an apartment literally 20 feet across the hall from her, as she has a young family and of two children. And somehow she got involved with this DeAndre Foster. And the bad news was this guy has a bad history and supposedly a member of the Latin Kings off the East Coast side, I understand. He somehow, and we don't know a lot of this detail because it wasn't shared so much in the sense of how their relationship or how they came together, but Michelle literally lived right across the hall from her. One Friday night, she came home, and the young girl was coming home from shopping and heard noises, but she was literally looking out the window and saw her going into the house, Charlotte going in the home, and then heard a large, large bang. Like a few minutes later, Michelle jumped up, ran over to the doorway of the apartment, and the guy had met her at the door. This person said everything's fine. Just leave. Just leave. And Michelle had yelled in the door and said, you know, Charlotte, you okay? And Charlotte said, I'm fine. So Michelle stepped back to her apartment. And then a few minutes later, she heard multiple bangs, got up, ran over. She was on the phone with her best friend live on her cell phone at the moment and came to the door of the of Charlotte's apartment. And the guy was running up the out the door. Michelle got in, stepped in, and said it was, you know, what's going on with Charlotte? What's going on? You know, and he says, none of your business. And we have multiple witnesses in this case in terms of people in the apartment complex because they heard everything go out and stepped out into this. The guy pulled out a gun and shot her in the head. She also, he had this just prior to that, shot Charlotte three times and killed her. The weird thing is, and the bad thing is that Michelle was one of the most giving people in the world. She, you know, people come from all walks of life and challenges, and Michelle came from that herself in some cases, but she was really committed on helping everybody that she was around her, and Charlotte was one of them. And even during the time when she was fostering, she saved all the money that she was paid in fostering and gave Charlotte the money to buy a car when she was 18 years old and was old enough to step out on her own. The bad part about this story is really not the tragic part of people losing their lives is one of them, but the steps is what Lark, our sheriff, talks about, Margaret Menz, and about how our catch and release program, this guy within on the third was arrested for battery and other things from another woman and released in the same day. And 6 days later, he kills two people.
Yeah, I was trying to figure it. Paul, just let me. I was trying to figure out exactly, you know, who and what was what. So this was another woman that he had battered, and she had complained.
Yeah, there was another woman, another girlfriend. Okay.
And so she had complained, and then somebody had a restraining order. Did either one of Michelle or Charlotte have restraining orders against him?
Not Michelle. Us as a family were not directly involved with Charlotte too much, so some of the details kind of gray. We believe that Charlotte had a restraining order against this guy also, and she came home to him with two other men in the apartment. And sorry, I'm a little sketchy. Our family has been just a blur in the last few days.
Understandable. Yeah.
It's been just a storm of information and also too stress, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm trying to figure out what's going on here because, like you mentioned, you know, you have this catch and release program. Here's a guy who had a restraining order against, he battered another woman, had a restraining order possibly against Charlotte. He wasn't even supposed to be there. He's a felon with a gun. And so we got a lot of laws here that apparently aren't doing any good.
He just got out of prison in July, from what we understand. And so then he's carrying a gun for this crime. He's got restraining order from, this is one bad guy. And you have to ask the question of how is he walking the streets? And you say it's catch and release.
Yeah. And this is an example, and it just tears a family apart. And, you know, my wife and I, through this whole time, we were the ones that fielded the phone calls. And just to back up just a little bit is that night, my phone went off, my wife's phone went off, my son's phone went off because Michelle's daughter, the gal that was on the phone with Michelle at the moment, didn't want to get off the phone, so it texted Amber, who was her daughter, who lives in Sacramento, and said, call the police, there's something going on with your mom, I think she was shot. And at the same time, now Amber's calling us, and then I'm calling Fresno PD, and I'm calling the hospitals. We're trying to figure out what's going on. We couldn't get in. Obviously, everything was almost in real-time moment within 20 minutes to 45-minute window. And this whole thing is, like, so surreal for us because we've not been even in the apartment. We've not been over there. We've not seen Michelle. We've not seen any of this. So the shocking part of it comes right up to literally my wife for the first time, who is just a rock of a person, broke down finally. She's been carrying the ball for mom and dad and other family members, and so you don't think you're going to be that family. You don't think you're going to be in this mix. And we watch the headlines around our community be a mess because of all these different scenarios, but this is one of them. This catch and release piece that our wonderful governor has put in play just is now looking at it through this lens is terrible. I mean, and our commitment is to get this guy what he deserves. The legal piece is the legal piece, well, and this, we'll stand behind for good of that.
This might finally be enough to put him away. You know,
But two people had to die to do it.
Yeah. You know, it's terrible. Yeah, yeah, but I mean, there's a couple of things going on here. One is like this domestic violence.
Right.
You know, women complain about domestic violence. Guys go to, they get arrested and they let them out. And then they get a restraining order and they don't pay any attention to it. And the cops tell you, well, we can't do anything until he does something. And that's where we are.
Right.
He did something.
Right.
Yeah. And by the way, this guy had, from what I, the information I have, he got out of prison after his latest conviction for being a felon in possession of a firearm.
Correct.
And he gets out of jail and he gets a firearm and he's still a felon in possession of a firearm. And, you know,
the story goes that the reason he flipped out was that when Charlotte came home with her cousin and three children, 1 8-year-old, I think a 2-year-old and a 9-month-old, he was in the back bedroom sleeping. One of the youngest ones went into the room and hit him, woke him up somehow, you know, like, you know, kids do, toddlers or whatever. And he came out just raging. And the cousin grabbed the kids and pulled them in the back bedroom and closed the door during this first start of this piece. And he fired a warning shot. And that was that first bang that Michelle heard. And she broke a window out and dropped the kids out the back window of the apartment. And then she climbed out herself, but was witnessed during the whole verbal part of until the three gunshots that killed Charlotte went off and she went out the window.
Wow.
And there's so many layers and there's other people that were actually witness to the shooting. From what we understand, we have not talked to people. We're getting some secondhand, some firsthand, but, we don't know what his prior is, you know, and there's multiple of these guys out there. We talk about our gang risks and all the different things that going. The two young men that were with him apparently were not involved in the altercations. Apparently they bailed prior to him shooting Charlotte, from what we understand. But it's just, you know, my sister-in-law, 50 years old, she'd just written her book. Matter of fact, tomorrow her daughter is going to be having her child. She's having planned because she's behind and late in terms of having her baby. And she wrote a book that we actually helped publish for a child's book that was written for her grandbaby. And you know, it's just so that family thing that you go through, you think you have all these wonderful things going on around a child's birth or just a celebration of life. And then you throw all this other stuff in and it's just a nightmare.
And what's really sad, too, is that, you know, your sister-in-law, Michelle, right? That's your sister-in-law?
Yeah.
And here she is just trying to help out this young gal by being a foster mother, by getting her an apartment, trying to help her. And obviously, Charlotte, the foster child, you know, she made some bad choices herself, sounds like, with her friendships.
Absolutely.
But that's kind of where she came from, I guess, and that's why Michelle was trying to help her out.
Yeah, and you're exactly, you know, that's the stress of a lot of that. You know, we wonder, too, why and how this guy got in play again. We knew that we had heard that he was around. We didn't know anything about him at the moment. This was either over the last couple of months we heard that she'd met this ruffian of guy, and we don't even know how he got involved in that. This is the, like you said, where she comes from history. Michelle has got a little bit of a jaded past herself, but nothing illegal, just historical. And Michelle's commitment was always to protect people. She always felt there was a good in everybody, and she, even through her own stripes, protected the weakest of the weak. And this moment, Michelle put that out there because Michelle was exactly that. She didn't care who the heck you were. You did something wrong and I'm going to protect her. She was a protector in this case, and she was scrappy, a 50-year-old that had an 18-year-old's body with a little bit of male mixed in, because she was pretty aggressive when she wanted to be, loud and proud and laugh like you wouldn't believe. But this scenario was an example of what Michelle's greatest weak and strength this was, and this is that she was committed to protecting Charlotte and or protecting someone that she had loved.
Hey, Paul, thank you very much for helping us wade through this story. We didn't know exactly who all the players were or how they were related, but you've clarified everything, and good luck to you.
Yeah, you bet. Thank you for the time. And we he's been arraigned this morning. It's supposedly at 8:30. We don't know the story, but we know that it was we've heard that they're seeking the death penalty, which I think is a big step. We don't know how long that's going to go. We know that trials go for years sometimes, and we're hoping that this pushes forward and locks this guy down, however it goes, because we don't want more.
Yeah, let's all hope so. Paul,
please
thank you.
Please keep us posted.
Sure will. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm so sorry for his loss.
But he's right about the, you know, if it's a death penalty, it'd be very complicated. It'll be very lengthy.
Yeah.
But like you say, Christina, at least they don't get death, but at least they get life.
They get life. Right? And if you get life, you never know.
Have another murder case that we want to talk about today, which is this Kristen Smart case.
Yes.
That there's been a new development in. This was a murder back in the 90s that finally might have some movement on it. We'll get to that coming up next on KMJ.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Well, yesterday, speaking of law enforcement, we had the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff announce the arrest of two people in the case of Kristen Smart. And this is one of those stories to me, John. It's just really interesting. You know, 1996, she goes missing. 25 years later, they finally arrest the initial person of interest in this case. And they're attributing it to this guy in San Luis Obispo in SLO. That's a podcaster that just even a few years ago hasn't been following the story even for 25 years. A few years ago, grew up in the area, saw the sign, the billboard that's still up to this day with her picture and name and reward on it, and thought to himself, who is Kristen Smart? And decided to do some looking into this and thought, there is something to the story. Came up with a podcast. And in once again, just kind of interviewing family and people with in the know about this case, investigators say that this guy kind of helped lead them to evidence to finally arrest this guy and the guy's father, the suspect in this case. It's just incredible. So we've got this, you know, news piece from NBC News that was done, you know, a month or so ago back, and leading up to a 48 hours piece that was done on this, focusing on this podcaster. So we're going to play a little bit of this for you just to kind of refresh our memories of Kristen Smart and this case.
Podcaster Chris Lambert grew up near where Kristen disappeared and remembers passing the billboard with her face on it.
Driving past that billboard was a periodic reminder that, oh yeah, they still haven't found that girl.
More than two decades later, Lambert, a CBS News consultant, began investigating what happened to her the night of May 24th, 1996. He learned Kristen had gone to a fraternity party at this house.
Kristen became incredibly intoxicated, whether she was drugged or whether she just had a lot to drink in a short amount of time. She ends up passed out on the lawn next door.
She needed help getting back to campus. A student named Paul Flores volunteered to take her back to her dorm.
So if you believe Paul's story, he goes into his dorm room here, and he leaves her to walk up this walkway. Her dorm entrance is right over here. I don't think that she went back to her dorm at all.
In fact, Kristen was never seen again, and Flores would become the focus of intense scrutiny by law enforcement, the Smart family, and their lawyer, James Murphy.
Every piece of evidence points directly at Paul Flores.
But Flores has never been charged with anything. Kristen's frustrated family blames that on numerous missteps by campus police and the sheriff's office. Cal Poly's police didn't begin investigating until Kristen had been gone for 4 days. And by the time they inspected Flores' dorm room, it was empty and had been thoroughly cleaned.
There was a lot of evidence that could have been gathered that wasn't. Why?
I wish I knew why.
From the start, Kristen's parents have been relentless in trying to find out what happened to their daughter, Kristen's sister, Lindsay.
What toll over time did this have on your parents?
I think they're like carrying boulders on their back.
Then, in 2011, new sheriff Ian Parkinson promised the Smarts that solving Kristen's case would be a priority. It has been a slow process, but earlier this year, sheriff's deputies and FBI agents searched Paul Flores' home.
I thought, somebody is taking this seriously, but how much time do you give them? They've had a suspect since pretty much day one.
Good morning, I'm Jonathan Vigliotti with CBS News. Were you involved in the disappearance of Kristen Smart?
So there you go, CBS News there, this 48-hour special that was done on this, highlighting that podcaster, Chris Lambert. And the podcast is Your Own Backyard. I was telling you, John, you know, in preparation for this morning's show, I started listening to the podcast. Quite interesting.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
We're going to talk about this Kristen Smart case, but before we do, I just want to mention there's a development out in Brooklyn Center in Minnesota where this officer, Kim Potter, had shot accidentally, she says, drew her taser instead of her gun, or gun instead of her taser, and shot him accidentally. She's now been arrested and says faces second-degree murder charges. I don't know if she's been charged yet, but it says faces second-degree murder charges. Now, she says it was an accident. Remember, the city manager said she was going to get due process. He was fired. Then she resigned. Then the police chief resigned. And they put in a new city manager, a new police chief. I don't know what's going on back in that town. But I did expect that she would be charged after the city manager said that and was fired. You know, they have this mayor back there,
right,
who I think is trying to appease the mob, right, and say, nobody's going to get away with anything here. You guys resign, get out of here. That'll help. Now we'll charge her and that. But I think they have a tough time convicting her of this. But
I'm not surprised.
Are you?
I'm looking up, you know, second degree manslaughter. What does it mean? And it says when a person recklessly causes the death of another person.
I think this is the same as the George Floyd case. They've got second degree, then they've got third degree murder, and they've got several charges for Derek Chauvin. By the way, that case continues. The defense now putting on their case in that one. But I'm just not surprised that they charged her. I think with the atmosphere that's going on back there, they had to charge her. They have to try her. She might get off. I think she probably will. I think a reasonable juror will listen and watch that tape and maybe conclude that that's exactly what happened. It was an accident. But I think anybody involved in this knew they had to charge her. Or else.
I guess.
It's an or else, right?
So it's not on them, huh?
Meanwhile, back to San Luis Obispo and Kristen Smart. Before we get back into this, Christina, we have a caller here, 490-5858. Kelly, you're on KMJ.
Good morning, guys. I actually went to Fresno State to San Luis, and I was on a sports team, and so we competed against San Luis often. So we were there all the time. So that her disappearance was not news to any of us. It was, you know, something that we saw, you know, the billboard, you know, ever since she went missing. But secondarily, like Christina, but several, I have the case because in the early 2000s, I actually had a younger brother, and who was a wonderful person. Just you would never know that they had a family tragedy like that, just by his demeanor and his attitude and the way he was just great to people. But thirdly, I did listen to the podcast, and it's just incredible that they're finally moving forward to this. So I feel like 6 degrees of separation, not that I'm a part of that at all, but I was definitely on that in a couple of days. So
have you ever seen the 48 hours special on this?
Well, but she's listened to the podcast.
Is that what you mean by the podcast?
You don't need to watch the 48-hour special if you listen to the podcast.
Well, the thing is, it's interesting about the 48-hour special is it's more about the guy who does the podcast.
Yeah, well, you have to listen to the podcast to understand the podcast. The podcast is about the guy too.
Okay,
and he kind of narrates himself, his thoughts, and he's really the narrator of the story and interviewer. It's not your typical kind of podcast where you sit down Q&A. It is almost as if every episode is 48 hours. And he's narrating that 48 hours episode. And his internal dialogue in his head, he narrates. It's very well done.
Yes. And I just want to say there were things that he brought up, you know, that were known clearly, you know, that, you know, if you follow the case at all, which, of course, I think a lot of people from this area did because, you know, the Smarts were from Modesto. And so, you know, we all feel a Valley connection to anybody that has, I think, in my opinion, we feel connect like that. But the stuff that wasn't known, like he mentioned, I don't know if this is on 48, but in the podcast, he mentioned that Paul Flores actually was ready to sign a plea agreement two times. And it fell apart at the very last moment because he wouldn't tell, well, allegedly wouldn't tell where her body was. It's not, this guy is the worst and his family is absolutely just despicable in helping him. So anyway, I just thought I'd share that. Thanks for covering it. And I hope the Smarts get some sort of closure from this because they deserve it for waiting for so long.
Yeah, 25 years. She would have been 44 years old this year.
Kelly, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, I just mentioned, I guess you've watched the podcast or what. I'm just telling, for people who want to remind yourself what's going on here, you know, that 48-hour special, it's easy to find on demand. I think this the podcast, is that on the Facebook page? In your backyard.
He has a website. He has a website. It's Your Own Backyard.
Your Own Backyard.
Your Own Backyard. And is the name of the podcast. And that's, you know, that's where you find it. It's really interesting just in the initial, you know, thoughts of this of was she drugged? Was she really drunk? You know, you heard it in even that promo for CBS for the 48-hour special. You know, what the room, you know, he was a person of interest from day one, but they didn't even enter his dorm room to check it out until 4 days later. And it was wiped clean. You know, it's just,
Well, the interesting thing about this story is this guy, Chris Lambert, that's his name, right? The guy that runs this webpage in your backyard or your own backyard,
your own backyard.
And so he sees this billboard. I guess somebody has kept this billboard going for years in San Luis, maybe the family. So he sees this billboard, and this has been going on for like 20 years or something, and he gets interested in it, and he starts investigating. And he now has, you always say, Christina, when you're a reporter, don't become part of the story. Don't become the story. Well, he's not really a reporter.
He says that from the get-go. He's he's a musician.
Yeah.
And he's an audio sound guy, which is, I think, why you chose a podcast platform, because the way that he does it with the music and everything is very well done. And obviously, that's his niche as an audio guy. He quit his day job to do this podcast and to pursue this story because he just wanted to know why nobody else was. Here, this billboard's been up, and yet for years, nobody's followed up on this story. And so he just wanted to shed light on this story that, you know, why was it that it's been 25 years and this billboard is still up and nothing's progressed? And why do I still see this girl's picture every single day when I drive past? And that was kind of, he says, that was it. It was as simple as that. And as he started delving into things, people allowed him to interview them. Whereas before they hadn't allowed themselves to be interviewed and to tell their stories. And in doing that, he opened doors for the sheriff's department and for detectives that they hadn't had open before, they say. And that allowed them to pursue other things that had never been pursued. And I don't know what led them to the backyard earlier this year, but whatever led them there, because they'd been there before, but whatever led them there with, again, cadaver dogs and x-ray material to see through things, these two people, Paul Flores and his dad, have now been arrested. Paul Flores held without bail. His dad held on $250,000 bail. And they say they believe they will find her body very soon. So, and they, and the sheriff's department attributes back to this podcaster, which is just kind of incredible.
Well, you know, if you watch these kind of shows like the 48 Hours, the Datelines and those kinds of things, 2020, a lot of times are like dead case files, right? There are files that just,
yes,
they just ended. There was nowhere to go. They put them in a file somewhere and they're still active, but they're kind of dead. And normally they're picked up by a new police chief or a new detective or somebody take a fresh look. But this guy was just a guy.
Just a guy.
And it looks like this is going to be solved because of him. Now, if what we're hearing is true, they say the father was an accessory, which means that he, if it's true, he knew that his son killed this girl and he helped hide the body in the backyard. If it's true what they appear to be accused of, you know, that his son killed the body, buried in the backyard of his father's house, and his father knew. Now, there's a mother involved here, too, but she's not been arrested, so I don't know. Maybe she didn't know this was even going on.
Right.
They also confiscated a car. I think the same car that this kid had used is still there on the property. Is that right?
You know?
Yep. And that car was still there, and they confiscated the car. And I don't know, you know, 25 years later, I don't know what you find, but it's just a very interesting story because of this guy, Chris Lambert, who just pursued this on his own time, like you say, because he just drove by this billboard every day and said, how many years am I going to have to drive by this billboard before somebody figures this out? And I think by getting this webpage started, his podcast, like say, he started communicating with people, people started talking to him, and he started figuring out some stuff. And here we are. Was it about a week or two ago that the sheriff's department showed up at this house, the Paul Flores house?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. And so we don't know. They say they haven't discovered the body yet, but they discovered something. And we don't know what that is yet. But I guess the sheriff's department had a news conference yesterday and talked a little bit about this.
Like the first caller, I hope that the Smart family finally gets some closure with this. You know, they sued a wrongful death lawsuit. They sued Paul Flores in 1996. And then they later sued Cal Poly as well. They, you know, it's, this is all about the time too. 1996, isn't that about OJ time as well?
A little after that, yeah.
A little bit after that.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you look at the early 90s in detective work versus what we do today too with the technology available and the things that we look at. And I'm just, to me, this is now of interest of what was it, you know, yesterday that led to those arrests.
Well, the other thing, and you know, San Luis Obispo isn't generally known as a hotbed for murder or anything like that. But
no,
the 90s, like you mentioned, was that OJ, but the 90s were the Wild West. So we had a lot of murders all over the state. That's
right.
That's when we were doing three strikes and use a gun, you're done, and all these laws and trying to put people away because we realized that these were repeat offenders, and same thing we're doing now. We were letting them out. They were repeat offenders. We'd arrest them, put them back in. They'd get out. That was, you know, the whole thing that happened here in Fresno, right? Like, that was a three-time loser that committed the murder that got three strikes going here, right? So here we are again, right back to those times.
How quickly we forget, huh?
And I'm waiting for the pendulum to swing so we start putting people back in jail. We just talked about this crime, the first segment of the hour, this double murder. Here's another guy. Arrest him, let him out, and he commits double murder. This is happening all over the country now. And there's all this reform, which means basically the translation for reform is let out, let them out.
This is the Broski and Musan podcast from KMJ and KMJNow.com.
Hey, you know, Christina, we talk about the fact that fire season is maybe not going to be good again, right?
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that.
They say that this year, as far as conditions are concerned, is worse than last year. Hopefully,
I may have to go live somewhere else for 3 months.
Now, you know, the good news is that these massive fires have burned a lot of stuff that won't burn again. If you want to look at the good side of the news.
You know what, though? This is California where the impossible happens.
Yeah. But there's still a lot of forest out there because we have a lot of forest. But so I saw this headline today. California targets urgent projects as wildfire season looms. Remember, that Governor Newsom had proposed this $500 million early action package, they called it, to suppress fires.
They're going to
do some control burns, do some clearing, that kind of thing. So I thought,
more hand crews, right?
So I thought, well, they got some urgent projects. I wonder if we have one of these urgent projects, you know? So I started
like here
reading.
Locally?
Yeah. Are they going to be clearing out some, doing some control burn? Because I'm like you. Last summer with coronavirus, with the fires, with the smoke, I mean, there were periods of time you just couldn't even go outside.
Yeah.
Even without coronavirus, you couldn't breathe. And, you know, we joke about seeing people jogging out there and say, don't they know?
Yeah, why are you jogging in this? Yes.
But Democratic Assemblyman Richard Bloom says this money is going to organizations and agencies that are, as we speak, planning how to roll out these efforts in advance as fire season is beginning. Fire season's already started. See, we've already had twice as many fires as last year. Fortunately, it hasn't been around here. And that's not a lot because it's early, but there's been twice as many. But Republican Assemblyman James Gallagher objected that $12 million, now that's not very much, $12 million in the funding package negotiated is going to a coastal land conservancy having nothing to do with fires. Okay?
Okay.
That's not much, $12 million out of $500 million. But another $125 million is to fulfill a legislative requirement that went unmet last year, again, having nothing to do with fires.
Okay, so now we're at about like
137.
Okay.
So 137 million out of the 536 million has nothing to do with fires in this fire emergency package. That's about 25%, I'd say, right?
Yeah, that leaves, you're right, because it leaves $400 million. Yeah.
That's about 20-25% of this emergency package for fires. And now we have an emergency. Every penny needs to go for this fire stuff.
Right.
But it's not. And this is what drives people crazy about California. And again, you know, I know Governor Newsom isn't being recalled because of stuff like this, but this is the stuff that he should be being recalled for. This is his package. Can we just deal with fires in a fire bill here? I mean, wouldn't that be nice? I mean, $500 million isn't really that much to take care of this problem. But when you're only getting 80% of it or 75% of it, that's not right. Anyway, James Gallagher, maybe we ought to get him on one of these days.
Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
He said all of this funding should go to managing forests. He said the rest of it is a lot of smoke and mirrors. And let's face it, we don't need any more smoke in California. And that's where we are with fire suppression in California. It's just like the COVID relief bill and the infrastructure bill. They just throw a bunch of other junk in there.